Courtship and covenant, how to raise up the next generation of faithful families. That's what we want to cover this year. And I want to inspire you guys. I want to stir this up to aim for great things, to aim higher. Dads, I want to inspire you to shoot for more for your kids than what you had, so your kids can be better. We want so much more for our kids. We want to learn about that and grow in that. You know, it's been said at some point in your life, you realize that your dad is the only man who ever wanted you to be better than him. Speaking of the world of competition, your dad's the only one who wanted you to be better than him. That's not good enough. Young man, I want you to be able to say, I had a whole church. I had a whole church that wanted me to be better. I had a whole generation that was building into me, pouring into me. We want to be inspired to pour this out for our kids so they can grow, they can be established in the faith and in the land and be better than we ever were. This message is then for all of us. So I heard this quote recently. This teacher was talking about teaching Gen Z. And Gen Z is anyone born from 1997 to 2012. Who here is born in that time? 97 to 2012. The teacher said this. I'm not saying this is you guys. This is the comment on Gen Z. I just want to put that out there first. It's not flattering. This is what the teacher said. These students combined ignorance with strident moral certainty. I like that. They seem to have no general education at all, and they lacked the most basic knowledge of history, even recent history. They were immature, emotionally fragile. Many could not handle criticism, no matter how sugar-coated it was. It took very little to reduce them to tears or to send them into a fit of narcissistic rage. They were shockingly bereft of intellectual curiosity, and many gave the impression of having no internal life at all. It's not that they couldn't think, but they mistook feeling for thinking. That's garbage. We don't want that. We want so much more. We want so much more for our kids, for the next generation. We are building here, seeking to build, by the Lord's grace, a new culture. Strength in our young people, a strong generation, stronger than we were. As the world has changed, I'll say it this way, as the world has changed, certain techniques in the past that may have worked no longer do. And that's on us to build into that generation. We don't want to farm out that responsibility to anybody else, not to other leaders, other churches, other anybody. It's on us, particularly dads. It's on you to raise your sons and daughters to be better. It's on us. And that's what we want to talk about this year and be inspired. So dads, do you know what to do when your teenage son starts to show an interest in girls? Do you know what conversations you need to have with him? Have you already had them? Do you know what guidelines to set? And equally important, is your son going to listen to you? Do you have his heart? Have you built into him? Have you forged a relationship of trust where your son wants your input? He's eager to listen to you. He wants you to guide him, because you're going to need both. You're going to need a whole bunch of wisdom, and you're going to need a relationship with him. It doesn't help to spout a bunch of wisdom when no one is listening. How about your teenage daughters? Do they know what they need to navigate their own beauty and their desires when they start to notice boys, or more to the point, when boys start to notice them? Are your daughters ready? Are they secure in your love, and do they know their value? Do they have wisdom to navigate this whole world of hormones and desires, growth? Are your daughters safe with you? Does your wife know that you are all in on this battle for the souls, the hearts of your children. Does your wife know that? Does she know that you are in the lead and you're working on this? Can she trust you? And if your kids are young, they're nowhere near that point yet. What are you doing now to build into them? Because if you haven't built into them by the time they reach puberty, you are so far behind. Someone already has their hearts and it's not you. Work begins when they're really, really young. Dads, do you know what to do? Are you working? So many of us don't. So many of us maybe didn't get that, or we feel ill-equipped. I don't know what to do. I want to do something. I don't know what that is. I didn't get it, maybe. Do you know? We want to talk about that this year. Young men, the Bible's clear. Marriage is good. Girls are good. They're awesome. God made you with desire. That's good too. And in all of that, God says sexual purity is a must. That's a must. It's not an option. Sexual purity, not just of your body, but of your mind. The Bible says that a young man needs to learn self-control. So young man, do you have it? Do you have control of your thoughts, of your body? Do you know what you should be doing with your life now if you hope to have a wife one day? What are you doing now? Are you actively working towards something, preparing? Are you coasting? If you find a young lady that interests you, do you know how to pursue her? What do you do? Do you have guidelines? Do you know what to look for in a wife? Do you have convictions about what dating or courtship might look like? Or do we just figure it out as we go? Figuring out as we go is usually a terrible plan. Older men, maybe your kids are grown and you don't have that interaction anymore, but do you sometimes look around and bemoan the state of the world? Back in my day, we had respect, or whatever. Maybe you think things aren't looking great for this generation. Economy's bad and politics is bad. Everything's getting worse. Do you worry about the future? Now, these questions are all important, and on top of them all, we ask, do we know where to go for answers? There's a lot here that we want to learn and get good at. How will we know what to do? How do we do this? How do we raise up the next generation? Now, this is going to pertain to all of us as we go through the married, the unmarried, the young, the old, those with kids, those without. We all got skin in the game. So the call is for everybody to get in. So we want to look to the Word, look at these questions. How do we train up the next generation? How do parents teach their children, guide them through the dating years? How do young people think about courtship, about finding a spouse? What role does the older generation play? It's going to be something for all of us. So consider Song of Solomon, chapter 8, 6 to 7. I'm going to read that. Song of Solomon, chapter 8, 6 to 7. Set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm, for love is strong as death. Jealousy is as fierce as the grave. Its flashes are flashes of fire, the very flame of the Lord. Many waters cannot quench love, neither can floods drown it. If a man offered for love all the wealth of his house, he would be utterly despised. Love Song of Solomon. God has put a power upon this earth, a power so great, you can honestly say it fears nothing. The perfection of this power drives out all fear. This power, this isn't an overstatement, is utterly oblivious to any kind of threat or force. It can't be bribed with all the riches of the earth. It can't be pushed around. It scoffs at death itself. It is equal in power, if not greater. Nothing hinders it. There's no mountain it won't climb. Nothing can tame it. No distance too far for it to go. There's no pain that it won't endure. The power that God has put here reflects his own. It gives us a glimpse of him, and he has poured that into our hearts. It is love. It is love. It is God's love. It is that powerful. Love is as strong as death. The Apostle John tells us that perfect love casts out fear. The perfection of love fears nothing. The greatest thing is love. God himself is love, and we are to love him with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, love our neighbor. And then, of course, we have the great love between a man and a woman. This is an unbelievably powerful thing, and because it is powerful, it is dangerous. It needs training. It needs discipline. Guidance. What are we supposed to do with it? What is its trajectory? Where is it going? What is it for? If it's so powerful, we need to learn about it. We need to know God's purpose for it so we know what to do, because it's meant for something specific. It's not just general. This love that we're reading about here in the Song of Solomon is meant to lead to a commitment and a covenant of marriage. That's the intent of this love, where a man and a woman vow to give themselves to one another for life, to the exclusion of all others. It's magnificent. It's a promise of exclusivity until death. One man, one woman. I give my life for the sake of my beloved. And no matter what happens, I'm looking for her. She's looking for me. I always know that she is mine and I am hers. I give my life for the sake of my beloved. And from this love, this covenant, that's where households come from. Children, the next generation of the church passing the gospel on. It's also to be a reenactment. It's like a living theater to all the world, representing the love of Christ that he has for his church. It's a living theater. The husband takes the role of Christ. You men that are married, you've been called to a living theater for the world to see on display. How are we doing, right? Wow. You're going to take on the role of Christ. And you are called to love your wife like Christ did the church. He's your example. And you're supposed to put that on display so the world sees it and marvels at the love of Christ. That's your calling. That's your duty. And this powerful love will help you to do it. The wife takes the role of the church as the one who submits to her head. And together they are to live in this love, showing the love of God for the world to see, for their children to see. The children see that and say, that is good. I want that. What's the story of this love? It's all part of how God created the world, how he created our own bodies that we live in. We need to understand this. It is powerful, and so often we just hope things are going to work out, because the teen years can be tough. Things don't always work out like you had hoped, and what do? So here are the pieces. A power is as great as death itself. God gives that to us. Power as great as death itself, God says, here. Here. We need to learn to use that well, to not let it become destructive. God calls us to a life-consuming commitment toward another. All my years are spent in connection and care towards one woman, to love her as Christ loved the church, provide and protect, to love and cherish, to lead, to grow in the faith, an exclusive covenant for better or worse, richer or poorer, sickness and health, till death do us part. And the very display of God's love being passed on to the next generation. This God has given. And he says, go to it. Go to it. And our children need to see it. Learn to love the goodness of it. The world needs to see it. It's not a game. The stakes and the risks, they're high. This is life. It's what we're called to. Power. Commitment. Gospel proclamation and the furtherment of humanity for the glory of God. That's what we're talking about. It's a big deal. God made it this way. It's so good. It's so good, and the world hates it. They laugh at it. They say it's not important. They mock it. They destroy it. And we are to be an anchor for the truth. We build thick walls of the gospel of the truth and the goodness of marriage, the goodness of being a man, of being a woman. Our bodies are obviously crafted to match each other, male and female. The Bible says we're called to this. In the normal scheme of things, this is the way in which God has made the world to function. We're not ashamed of that. We embrace it, we promote it, we celebrate it, we protect it. It's good. Now, just a brief aside here as we're starting to dig into it a little bit. I need to note that this does not mean that absolutely everyone gets married or that everyone has children. This world is not ideal. It has fallen. And God remains sovereign over your life. Not everyone's life is going to look the same. The point that I'm making is that there is a normal trajectory that God has built into creation. And just because there are exceptions, that does not allow us to ignore the obvious. Marriage and children are the norm, but for the exceptions, you have a part to play that is every bit as important as anybody else. You are not left behind. God has left a testimony for us, a testimony of singleness, a testimony of childlessness for all of us to consider and honor. This is Christ himself. He was the perfect man. The perfect man. He had neither wife nor children in this life, and yet he was not lacking. He was not less than. He was complete. He had a path given to him by God, and he walked it faithfully. He walked it perfectly. So marriage and children are the norm, but that does not mean everyone's path is the same. But we would be fools and rebels if we denied what God has done in creating the world in the way that he has, if we denied what he has written in his word about this. He created marriage. He created bodies that are designed to fit together with a purpose, a trajectory. He's told us who we are, what we are to do, and there's no ambiguity about that. There's no ambiguity about one's sex drive. What a powerful thing it is that he has put in men in particular. God put that there. It's good. It needs to be controlled, but it's good. It's not something we're ashamed of. And for those who don't have that drive, God has a place for them too. He hasn't made a mistake here. None of this is complicated. It's straightforward. The rules apply. The exceptions are obvious. And none of this should be controversial. So I want to emphasize this in this introductory session. I want to kind of have us catch the vision of what we want to be chasing after this year. This season coming up is for all of us, no matter your status. Marriage affects everyone, no exceptions. All of us are affected by it, whether you're young or old, married, single, children or not. Your children are grown, you're in your latter years. Your children are babies and nowhere near courtship. You have no children at all. No matter who you are, this pertains to you. Marriage is not just a private matter. It's also public. It affects everyone. It's religious, but it's also civic. It's public. Societies are built upon it. If you have no children ever in your life, know this, you are still going to depend on someone else's children at some point. They matter to you. They matter greatly. Someone else's children are going to be your leaders, your doctors, your healthcare providers, your lawmakers, your neighbors, bankers, politicians. And they will be either building society up or they're going to be tearing it down. It's going to matter to you a lot. Marriage matters to everybody because marriage has to do with society and we're a part of it. There's going to be honest bankers, mechanics with integrity, nurses who care, or there won't be. Other people's children are going to matter to you. Other marriages are going to matter to you. So you can rest assured it's all going to matter to you personally. We all got skin in the game. No one gets a pass. We don't sit on the sidelines and just hope that the next generation is going to figure it out on their own or someone else is going to take care of it. In the world that God has made, there are no sidelines. We're all on the playing field. So then we ask, will the older generation take that command seriously to train the younger? It's one of the more common things. An older person, I feel it myself, what do I have to give to the younger? I didn't get trained in the way that I think that I should. I'll tell you this story. Maybe I've mentioned it before, I don't know. I must have been 12 or 13. And I had gone to bed, and my mom came into my room. You could tell she was nervous. And she goes, Chad, do you know about girls? And I said, yes, I know about girls. Okay, good. Have a good night. And she was gone. That's it. That is all that I got. There was no way my dad was going to talk to me. Not going to happen. My mom was scared. And that was it. So I learned about a lot of this stuff from the radio. Dr. Ruth Westheimer, she was a sex therapist who talked about sex, and I listened to it at night. I learned about it there. That's what I got. And now I hear the command, older, teach the younger. Like, huh. Well, that wasn't good, but what is good? I wish somebody, I had someone to build into me. I need a mentor. How can I be a mentor? That is our fear. That doesn't exempt us from the command. This is what God has said. Older, you teach the younger. Give them what you didn't have. Learn. That's what we're going to do this season. If you don't think you're equipped to mentor, to train your sons and daughters, we're going to learn. We're going to learn. It doesn't do any good just to complain that things are bad. Cowardice is not an option. Hoping someone else will do it. That's not a plan. God says, you do it. And at the same token, will the older women take the command seriously to train the younger women in their God-given duties? To be busy at home? Do they have a passion for the home? Do we teach that? Do we love it? Do we embrace it? The Bible says they have a place, and it's a place of honor and glory. It's beautiful. It is so, so good. Do the women love it like that? Because the world tells them something different, and they will hear a million messages. Do they ever hear from the men how glorious they are? So that they want to pass that on to their daughters. Do the women have a passion for the home? We're not full of exceptions. Sometimes it's, oh, I'm an exception. And sometimes everybody's an exception. For something to qualify as an exception, it must be in the minority, a small amount. You can't have a rule that God has given to everyone and 90% are the exception. So consider yourself in the spotlight. You're up. You're up. Will the women love their husbands and children? Do they love the idea of being submissive to their husbands? Are their husbands leading with godliness, with Christ-like love? Or do the husbands make it really difficult for their wives to submit? Because the wives have that command, whether you're a good leader or not, every time she opens the word, it's going to say, submit to your husband. Are you making that easy for her? Is it a blessing? Is it a joy? Or are there tears at night as she tries to figure out how to submit to you? Is she thankful for her femininity, her feminine nature? Do you live with her in a gentle way, understanding way? Do you honor her as a noble woman? So there should be no cringing in teaching to love the domestic arts to women. They should love it. And we should help them love it. And there should be joy and celebration. It's what God has said. We're not ashamed of that. We promote that. It is good and it is right. So, men, are you leading the charge in teaching, training, discipling your children? Do you set the boundaries? Have the tough conversations? Do you pray consistently for your family? Sometimes when we say, I pray for my family, what we do is just sit and worry about them and kind of call that praying. Right? Is it true intercessory prayer? Or do you just like, ugh, I'm worried? Do you work? Are you laying your life down for them? As Christ did for his bride. Provide, protect. Do you bring your own body under control? Strive for Christ-likeness. Could you tell your sons honestly, son, imitate me as I imitate Christ? Not perfectly, I get that. But can you say that, son? Watch me. I will show you the way. I will help you. Follow me. Can you do that? We got to get into the game, be challenged, grow, have courage. God does not allow his sons to be cowards. I've said this before too. It's always just stunning to me. In Revelation, the list of people who don't inherit the kingdom, the idolaters, the adulterers, the murderers, and then he says the cowards. The cowards are placed in this category of adulterers, idolaters, and murderers. I think, wow, I'm not those things, but am I a coward? Ah, yeah. God doesn't want us to be cowards. He says, quit yourselves like men. Act like men. Play the man. So we got to learn. We got to learn. We want to play to win. Because we don't parent. We don't exercise our fatherhood in just blind hopes that something's going to work. We have the promises of the word to anchor our obedience. God has said. God has made promises. Train up a child in the way he should go. Love your sons. Love your daughters. We have promises from the Lord. We're not doing this in a vacuum. And then will our young people heed the call to grow up and take their place in the generation as mature men and women, leaving the childish things behind? Do they want it? Because the world, the flesh, and the devil all entice them to perpetual immaturity, to be lovers of pleasure, lovers of self, to not learn self-control. Are our young people, our children, all in on the vision of godliness, of marriage, building a household? What do our young people want in their hearts? What do they love? What have we taught them? Do they love most Christ-likeness or worldliness? And who's going to instruct them, give them a helping hand to get there so they can succeed, get higher than we did? We think about us as a church. Are we going to leave these young men here, a church building that is ready for use for years to come, where they can bring their families, where they can be established? Or are we going to leave them riddled with debt because we had no vision for anything that came after us? Do we only have eyes for our own comfort, leaving them to figure it out on their own? Will we sacrifice for them? I love this project that we got going on. Lord willing, that's going to outlast all of us guys. We're fathers now. We want to pass something on that we're not ashamed of for our sons, a place they can build their family. So let's build it, let's pay for it, and let's pass it on. Let's give them something. Let's pass on blessing, not burden. So our sons rejoice in what we have given them, building into them Christ-likeness, character, love for the word, love for their wives and their children, whatever God has for them. And come on, let's give them something more than what we had. So young and old have a vested interest in this topic because it affects all of us through the generations, the church, the nation, the future. So we're going to talk this season about courtship and covenant. I'll be speaking specifically to the young people on how to move forward in life, how they can succeed at the task that God has given them. I'm going to be talking to the parents, how to help guide you, guide them through the years so that we're better equipped. I'm going to be talking to those who aren't directly involved, the older generation, singles. How do you get involved? What's the call for everyone to do our part? We want to get a vision for this and with joy and confidence on the promises of God, move forward. It's not just our generation. It's their generation and the next till the Lord comes again. We want to raise our eyes up and see what God is doing. The very fact of children means God's still working, right? Sunday morning, you just see all of these children. That tells you God has not given up and he's not left us with a dead end. There are children. Life goes on. Let's not stagnate. There is a future to be thinking of till the Lord comes again. We work, so we want to hear that call. We need a vision that's not just for ourselves, but for the generations. So for the glory of God through the ages, we press into the season with a vision for the future, for what God is doing. We want to pass this on to that generation. The gospel shines, the lamp doesn't go out. So as older ones, when we come to the end of our days, we're not ashamed of what we have done, not ashamed of what we have built, and not ashamed what we leave behind. We want our children to be blessed by us, not burdened by us. And we look to God to bless our efforts to grow his kingdom. He desires godly offspring. We know that's what he wants. He has said so. Malachi. He desires godly offspring. This is in keeping with his plan. You think just briefly what young people face today. The world has changed, of course, with the advent of the internet. It's quite unprecedented in the history of mankind. Internet, cell phone. These young people are exposed to every evil, every temptation, every lie, every deception, every distortion, every distraction that the devil has ever concocted. They are sold a lie about what is important in life and what isn't. The world laughs at we want to hold what we want to hold in honor. They point their finger and mock and laugh. And our young people are being sold this daily. They are told who is in charge and how to obey without question. People are taught cowardice. They are taught that lust is good. They are taught that marriage is not important, children even less so. In short, they are told that evil is good and good is evil. I know we say this till we're sick of hearing it, but we should never stop. We have an ocean of children's blood that cries out to God for vengeance through abortion. Murdered in the womb. And even as evildoers clamor for more, we got political leaders who protect that murder. Who was that? There was a group of doctors coming out of Quebec. There was an article just last week. Some society of doctors out of Quebec, they were suggesting that if a child is born diseased or deformed, good care, like they said, health care would be to euthanize the child. Right? And so that's not happening yet, but the doctors are openly saying this would be health care. This would be compassion. They don't know what love is. They don't know what we know. The killing of the elderly, the weakest among us, and that's hailed as a great good. Debauchery of every kind, pushed, promoted, protected, paraded. You wonder if any nation under Baal was ever so bloody and evil as what we have become. We do it in a much more sterile condition. Remove the sterility and what would we see? And God still judges nations. And he calls Christians, the church, to stand, to understand the truth, to proclaim it, to live it, to be the display. The gospel light does not go out. Then on top of all of that, youth itself is held in incredibly high esteem. It is, you could say, it's worshipped in our culture. Stay young. Act young. Party. Have a good time. We got 30, 40, 50-year-old teenagers. They just never grow up. You see this all the time in the entertainment world. The teen years are for fun, friends, hanging out. Don't worry about life yet. Go and have fun. We can get caught in that trap of glorifying youth. But nowhere does the Bible ever teach that the teen years are a time to put life on pause and to pursue indulgence or irresponsibility. No such thing. Now, please, as I say that, I know, note what I'm not saying. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have fun, that fun is a bad thing. I'm not saying there's no room for a good time to laugh and play. Of course there is. It's not what I'm saying. But when that becomes the message, then we have a problem. That's not the message. So many of our young people get caught in the trap of fun, prolonged immaturity. And what we find is that when they hit their 20s and on, they have no idea how to be an adult. They've never been taught. Often there's no plan for the future, no skills or vision. Many have a hard time even just sitting through church service. They've never learned how. Statistics show that going from teen years into adulthood is the time when most people leave the church. That's the exit. You come out of the youth years, and those years there's a lot of fun and excitement there, friends, and then you enter the adult life, and they don't know how to function. That's when the majority of people will leave. That's been happening for decades. And we want to train them to love the church, to pursue righteousness, Christ-likeness, to want that, to love it. So I'm not saying that fun is bad. Not at all. But when it becomes the main goal, we got an issue. Then we got a problem. The passions that drive us are powerful, like love is powerful. Young people need to learn self-control, and we are to help them do it. So we're trying to build here a whole new culture, and we're going against the grain of society, of what the world would teach. We don't want to piggyback off of what the world does. We don't want to copy what it does. But looking to the Word, we want to create something that God loves. And he has told us what he loves. It's not a mystery to us. The question is whether we will love it and pursue it. Light comes from the Word. So the church is not the place for finding a new way. Look for the ancient paths, it says. You hear that voice behind you saying to the right or to the left, this is the way. That's what we want to look to. The Church is the place where the word of God is embraced, where it is loved, where it is taught, it is obeyed. The anchors of the soul are set in deep so that they hold when the storms come, because the storms will come. You know that. Boy, you're going to get lit up in this life. Men, and it's going to be hard. If you don't have an anchor for your soul, you get swept away. And if you get swept away, how will you teach your children to be strong? So we want to get to this work. In building a church, in building this culture, this love for the things that God loves, it's been said, what you win them with is what you keep them with. If you win people with fun, that's what you keep them with. And you got to keep having the fun to keep them. If that's what you win them with, if that's the message, come here and have fun, you have to keep that, because that's why they're there. If you win them with the gospel, then you keep them with the gospel. And is that harder than fun? Yes. Yes, it is. But this is the task. Win them with the gospel. Which again is why so many young people find themselves lost at this time. They're not having fun and they desire it, which is fine. But if you win them with the gospel, and that's what we want. So young men, I want you to be here because you want to be here, not because I told you to or because mom and dad has to force you to. I want you to love it. I want you to love it, to know your God. I want to stand in my generation as a man of God, to raise my family so the Lord give me one. I want you to love it for yourself, not to please anyone else, but because you know your God, not being swept about by what the world will tell you. I want you to be actively growing in the Lord, desiring the things that the Lord loves, to carry forward that mandate of dominion, multiplication, gospel growth. I want you to love it. I want us all to love it. You grow it, get a taste for what you feed on. And if you feed on your lusts, if you feed on your waste of time, if you feed on the world, that's what you begin to love. You get a real taste for it. It's like, oh, this is enjoyable to me. But if we feed on the word, on the truth of God, on the gospel, that's our meditation. That's our love. We are stirred up to love it even more. So the things of the world start to grow dim and someone comes to offer you a cheap counterfeit. You're like, I'm not interested in that. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. This is what we want. So many of us struggle with it. It's hard in our life to do that. And yet we need to do it. And then we need to pass that on to the next generation. That's what we're going to be talking about. We want our young people to be actively growing in the Lord, desiring these things to carry it forward. A generation that holds the things of the Lord in honor. Young men, I don't want you to be ashamed of the things of the Lord. I don't want you to be weak when the world laughs at you. But to have courage and conviction when you're tested. Building a generation that holds the things of the Lord in honor with joy. A big, big vision, but it is the Lord's vision for us. And as best as we can, we got to get our hand to the plow and get to work. We want to produce a culture, a people here at Cornerstone that love the Lord with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. Because love is as powerful as death. And when young people learn to love God, they learn how to love a spouse, their children, their church. They learn to love righteousness. The world has changed. They can't help but be changed. We don't have to be a country filled with bloodshed and debauchery. As the gospel goes forth, families are established. Men and women taking the roles with joy and blessing. The fruit of the gospel then is inevitably seen in the world through faithful Christians. It bears fruit. Faithful men, faithful women making fruitful, strong households. Strong households build strong nations. And then the glory of God is seen in his blessing on a people. And he resides in the praises of his people as we come together to worship and to learn, to submit with joy and with love, training our children, bringing our children, and the children want to be like us, for we are like Christ. So it's no small task, obviously. Takes all of us to do it. Each one is called to get in the game. So this season, we want to do our best to help equip you in whatever area you find yourself. Everyone's in their own spot, young and old, whatever. want to help equip you so that we're working together, where we can come along and encourage. As I speak to the young men in some sessions, I'll be talking to them directly. But I need you older guys here to hear it, to know what the message is. What does the word have to say to the young men so you can come along? If you say, I don't know how to mentor them, well, you need that session as much as they do so you know what to mentor them in. All together now to grow and be strengthened. No one should be alone in this battle. Some of you feel like you were alone as you grew up in it. Let's do better for our kids. Let's aim higher. Let's aim higher. We are not without the resources. We have the word. We have the spirit in us. We have a church. We have this group. Encourage and grow. Pray together. Come alongside and disciple, mentor. So we want to help equip you as best as we can. We won't cover everything because there's a lot that you got to figure out on your own. I'm not in charge of your home. Dads, you're up. You're going to have to take the lead in it. I cannot and will not do that for you. But we can help give you the principles. We can encourage. We can instruct. Help counsel. And I'm going to be speaking to the parents and their roles. How to guide through this time from young to when they leave the home. I want to be addressing young people, pointing them in the direction that God would have them go. How to find a wife, how to find a husband. How to be a wife, how to be a husband. And the goal is that all of us find a place together in building the next generation. This is what God has called us to. That's the vision for this season. May the Lord help us to grow in it. So I encourage you to come, press in, be challenged, find your place. The Lord has something for you. And let's pass this thing on so that those that come after us are better than we ever were. Let's give them something that we never had. Further up and further in, men. The call is clear. May we be found faithful to it.